Vance was warned long ago.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process.
And then warned again, not long after.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment.
In fact, the U.S. is still warned to this very day. But are you listening?
Are you listening?
What if the American people woke up and understood that the official reasons for going to war are almost always based on lies and promoted by war propaganda in order to serve special interests? What if we as a nation came to realize that the quest for empire eventually destroys all great nations? What if the American people learned the truth, that our foreign policy has nothing to do with national security, that it never changes from one administration to the next?
And this is Republic Theory with Dallas Andrews and Warren Dyson.
And welcome once again to another edition of Republic Theory. I'm Dallas Andrews, joined once again by the one, the only, Warren Dyson. Warren, great to have you back.
It is good to be back, and my thanks to Vicks NyQuil, who is not paying me for this endorsement, for getting me back.
Vicks NyQuil. That's our first actual advertiser right there. And funny thing, we're not getting paid. Yeah, we did hate to miss you during the Richard Gage show a couple of weeks ago, but it is good to have you back. And tonight we are going to be discussing a most controversial topic. Imagine that. We never get controversial here now, do we?
Oh, no. There's nothing controversial about what we say unless we're broadcasting.
That's pretty much the case. Tonight's discussion will revolve around the separation of church and state. And obviously, it's difficult to broach the subject of religion without having some kind of controversy. You know, in this country, we've all heard the phrase, three things you don't talk about: sex, religion, and politics. And I don't know, Warren, if you'd agree, but you've heard me say before, I can't think of three better things to talk about. So, in our tradition here at Republic Theory on Jackalope105FM.com, we will discuss the separation of church and state, why it is important, and why specifically, and I want to hit on this, why so many, be it a majority in this country or not, believe that there's not supposed to be a separation of church and state. Warren, what are your thoughts?
Well, my quick and rather snarky answer to that is I believe people who are insecure in their beliefs can't handle the fact that there are other people out there with different beliefs, and they'll use whatever tools are necessary to change the minds of the population in general, whether that be friendly, in disguise, Saturday morning programming aimed at kids, like you see with the VeggieTales and things like that, or whether it's actual governmental control. And we see that in many countries that do not have a very, very distinct separation of church and state.
That's a fact. I think that if you, especially what you just hit on there with respect to the countries that do not have that wall, where one religion or another, we can obviously point to numerous countries in the Middle East, even in Africa, anywhere around the globe, you can find countries that that allow religion. Or I guess I should say religion allows the people to breathe each day. These are not places where you would want to live, and not so much because you may not agree with the theocratic prevailing message or belief system, but because you wouldn't want to live there anyway. Very high crime rate, very high poverty rate, starvation in some cases, and I don't know. I just don't believe that there's any such thing as coincidences. I think all things are relative to some extent, and I find it compelling that. And I'm not necessarily an atheist either. I don't really put myself into a classification because I do think that there's an order of things. But at the same time, I've never prescribed to any particular man-made or mankind-tainted religious doctrine that at the highest levels are always surrounded and marinated with money and power. And yet, the countries that seem to embrace that the most or allow it for whatever reason, either because they believe it or, I'm sure in many cases they're afraid to try to change it, these countries suffer. Countries that have the fewest atheists, they don't fare as well, and that's a fact.
Well, I think partially that's a fact because with the whole doctrine of atheism, and I am an atheist. I used to be a rather militant atheist even, but I've kind of laid off recently because I'm over 30 and I just don't have that kind of energy anymore. but with atheism, you get a certain respect for reason and rationality and truth. In fact, since I'm no longer a Christian, I find myself with a much greater respect for objective truth than when I was a Christian. And with that, you start to actually solve social issues. You actually start to address the real problems, the elephant in the room, as I think Richard Dawkins calls it. And I think that's a very impressive thing when you're able to move beyond doctrine and actually start listening to fact.
I think that the founding fathers, and we're gonna hit on some of this throughout the course of the program. I think the founding fathers came to this country, or at least the original settlers, when the idea came about to separate from Great Britain and to do things in a different way. Religion was right there at the top, and I don't know where this gets missed. I don't know why some people find it so easy to misinterpret this, but then again, the people who do are the same people who believe that the first two human beings ever created, or the first one anyway, sprouted out of the dirt. Why, I don't know, but that is the case. However, the founding fathers that laid the groundwork for the government that, what's left of the government that we enjoy, they were coming out of a great deal of experience as far as watching what religion does from a power standpoint, because there's kind of two categories here. You've got the people that follow religions, but I kind of go to the tip top. I think that, like I said, there's no coincidences. You go to the most religious countries in the world, they're generally the most poor, and so forth and so forth and so forth. And when you look at the money that is either allowed to be earned, like we have in this case with religions being allowed to bring in tax-free dollars, or other countries where the money is just simply controlled by the religious establishment, it's odd that that isn't shared with the people in most cases. And I think that the founding fathers, they had been close to the strife and to the heartache, to the pain, to the travesty and the tragedy that's associated with religious rule. And so that's why one of the first things they wanted to address was keeping religion out of government.
And it's one of the most important things they addressed. You have to keep in mind that Britain at the time was a religious monarchy, and it was in fact a Protestant monarchy. And there, who knows how much violence had gone on, Protestant versus Catholic previous to that. And they did come to America seeking religious freedom, but part of that religious freedom is the freedom to not be religious.
Right, right.
I've always found it interesting how I actually heard a quote from Al Gore, and I really should have pulled this. He said, "Freedom of religion does not mean freedom from religion." And I couldn't disagree with him more. I think that freedom from religious influence is one of the most valued things that we have as a people.
Yeah, indeed. Well, I mean, history doesn't lie. And there's generally not many areas of history until you get to religion where the story isn't told. History is kind of a catchy, fun little word I learned back in high school. A football coach I had that taught, I think it was world history, the year I took of world history that we all take. History, he broke down into two words, his story. Put them together, history. In that case, you'd probably need two S's, but you get the point. What mankind has done over time, at least since we've been able to record history, whatever we've got, since we entered a time when it became, I guess, in vogue or beneficial to a select few, profitable, beneficial ambition. For example, we go all the way back to ancient times when civilizations worshipped the sun, which does bring life. You know, they worshipped celestial bodies, which is not to say that the sun is necessarily a god, but I think they were closer than when we entered the era of allowing mankind to start telling and to start trying to mandate what people or how people interpreted why they exist and specifically where they'll be going once they die, because that's really been the sales pitch behind religion from day one. You know, people call prostitution the oldest profession, and I think religion is probably the oldest profession because the ability to appeal to mankind with our intelligence level, we're the only, at least as best we know, we're the only life form on the planet of the hundreds of thousands of life forms, if not millions, that can ask the question to ourselves, where did I come from and where am I going? As far as we know, no other animal does that. So it wouldn't have taken too long for people to start exploiting that. And, you know, religion is a fantastic business plan. Tax-free income, taxed or not, here's income for a service where you don't actually ever have to provide any goods. I use the term service, and I guess I shouldn't, but we've talked about this before, you know, off the air. I can sell you on an idea, Warren, that this, you know, whatever will happen, you'll pay me for it, and yet it never happens, and it never happens. And I appeal to your faith. Not that there's anything wrong with faith. This isn't about whether or not there's anything wrong with faith. We all have a degree of faith in one thing or another, all things big and small. But when it comes to, you know, eternal salvation, life after death, this has been exploited better than anything I can think of over the course of mankind.
Well, and the unfortunate fact is that it's a very easy thing to exploit. You look at a case like, take Jonestown, for example, where you've got 800 people willing to kill themselves because of their belief in one man who any outside observer would determine was insane. You look at the Heaven's Gate cult, where you've got 26 degreed computer programmers, very intelligent people, who are committing suicide because they think that killing themselves is going to get them taken to a UFO that's hiding behind the Hale-Bopp comet. It's almost unfathomable for some of us, but faith can be a very dangerous thing, and it's a very easy thing to sell to some people who are looking for something to believe in.
Right, and those people, these tend to be the people who really don't seem to have too much interest in thinking for themselves. And I guess I was just raised in a different way because I've always thought for myself. Sometimes in classes in school, you know, let's face it, much of the curriculum in schools is not highly applicable, if applicable at all. And even at a young age, you know, I would daydream sometimes. And it's not because I, you know, have ADD or something. It's because I'm bored and I'm going to think. There's something on my mind and I want want to contemplate that. And faith seems to go against that. I'm going to fire off this quote real quick. This is from James Madison, fourth president of the United States of America, and obviously the father of the Constitution. "The purpose of separation of church and state is to keep forever from these shores the ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe in blood for centuries. Religious bondage shackles and debilitates the mind and unfits it for every noble enterprise." James Madison, all right? I don't see how you would really misinterpret that as to meaning that, we're supposed to be a Christian nation, because that's really where this is going. You know, we keep hearing rumblings through the mainstream press about religious groups up in arms over Merry Christmas being removed from a Walmart sign or something. I mean, you've seen all this. And I just don't understand where the idea comes from. How do they conclude that despite the fact that most of, if not all of the original settlers in this country, if not the framers of the Constitution, despite having been Christian, somehow are disappointed that we're not the Christian states of America as opposed to the United States of America? And there's people who want this.
Well, there are people who want it, and there are people who realize that the founders didn't create this country to be a Christian nation, but they would love us to turn into one. And I can't think of anything more frightening, especially when you consider that a good 40% of the population of America isn't Christian. They're either non-believers, or they're Muslim, or they're Jewish, or whatever other faith you have. And to think then that 60% of Christians can just turn us into a Christian nation is unfathomable. You hear people making outrageous claims like the laws of the United States were based on the Ten Commandments. Well, that's patently false. If you just examine the commandments, obviously thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. Those are fine, but those have been laws of mankind since mankind became mankind. It's just a common law. But then you get into the other ones like thou shalt have no other gods before me. Well, where does that translate into the Bill of Rights? It simply doesn't. It's best to just keep them separate and keep them out of each other's way, because even as an atheist, I don't want the government telling people what they can and can't believe. I think that's a violation of their rights.
Right. I think what and you might be able to elaborate on this a little better than I can, but I've heard reference to the fact that the separation of church and state is as much about protecting religious freedom as it is from, from protecting governments from intrusion upon religion. Because, frankly, between you and me, and however many the four people listening here, both can't be trusted. They both can't be trusted. Governments, let's face it, they don't have the strongest track record, on this planet anyway. Some other place in the universe, perhaps, but on this planet, regarding humans anyway, governments don't have a real strong track record. Not in recent recorded history of the last 2,000-3,000 years, perhaps. We've seen, countries prosper economically. You can look at ancient Rome, obviously a very advanced civilization for its time, but even Rome found a way to collapse as times change, and I do understand that nothing stays the same forever, but governments don't have the best track record, and religions frankly don't either. And when you blend them, or if religion and government are in fact synonymous, it's an absolute fucking catastrophe, and that's the simplest way I could put it.
It's a disaster, especially when the people in power are a minority people who have a very violent religious doctrine backing them. And we've seen this in certain Middle Eastern countries. We've seen it with Israel, which is a relatively small country with a very militant religious teaching, who frankly is being exquisitely funded and supplied by the American government. And nothing against Jews, but they did kind of move into the neighborhood. and kind of push some people out of the way. And it's a religious government, and it's driven by religion, and their violence is religiously driven. And I can understand the need for somebody to want to defend themselves, but I mean, they're bulldozing houses, but people still in them. And that's not really self-defense in my book.
It's not?
I'm not even going to make a smart-ass comment about that. I'm just going to let that go.
You not make a smart-ass comment? What happened to you while you were gone?
I drank a lot of NyQuil.
Yeah, maybe you should be on that NyQuil a little more often. I don't know. Yeah, it's a very broad topic. And again, I want to stress that this is not... this is not about anti-faith, because in so many cases that's what this discussion turns into. And frankly, I'm a bit offended that it even needs to be a discussion when you consider the fact that religion has the track record that it has, which is quite frankly very violent, very murderous. It's also one of those things that is, because we call it faith-based, it's one of those things that is. In almost every religion I know of, and especially Protestant/Christianity, it's so open for interpretation. So in other words, you take two Catholics side by side, even they don't see the religion the exact same way. You know, take two Christians. I mean, you pick the religion. Any two people, you know, after September 11th, with all the blame going to these alleged, you know, Muslim commandeering people and so forth, in the mainstream press and you know, water coolers everywhere, there was the debate beginning, angry people blaming the Muslims. And then on the other side of the coin, people who knew better understood that, you know, the Muslim religion isn't, that's not what it's about. In this country, we have some of the most fundamentalist Christian whack job abortion killers that rival, you know, any of the activities like you were just talking about. Violence is violence, and I don't think it really matters which color cup you choose to drink from. You know, Kool-Aid's Kool-Aid, and in the case of, you know, Jonestown, we see where it got him, you know?
Yeah, I know. And the really unfortunate thing from my point of view is that people can be convinced to drink the Kool-Aid, that people can be convinced through their faith to do things that are against their own self-interest. And I'm not a selfish guy. No, I am a selfish guy, but I try not to be a selfish guy. But I don't want to do things that are motivated against my own self-interest. I see, and this is one of the funniest ones, I see just on a political level, people driving around in beat up, old pickup trucks with a Bush Cheney sticker on the back of it.
Right.
You know, these people who are voting against their own economic interest because this person in office is going to allow them to keep their shotgun. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not prioritizing what is actually important to them. You know, you have to be able to put food on the table before it matters whether or not you can buy ammunition.
Right.
And I'm afraid that's just the fact. You have to prioritize. And these people who have been convinced through religious means to kill themselves with Kool-Aid or applesauce or a vest of dynamite, or to commit murder in the name of their faith, are doing things that are blatantly against base human self-interest, which is survival and prosperity.
And you can even go into the fact that religion aims to to one degree or another, let's just take Christianity, because that's the one I know, you know, the most about. That's what I've been exposed to the most, and that's the truth with you as well. Christianity is all about procreation, and yet the doctrine coming out of churches everywhere is everything that would have you not procreate. You know, I've told you before, and you know, I'll mention again, in high school for, you know, close to 3 years, I dated a preacher's daughter, a couple of years younger than me, and you know, the stereotypes are pretty much true, I guess. But what I did really, I mean, regarding preacher's daughters, mind you, But what I found pretty compelling, even at 17, 18 years old, you know, going to a lot of church for a while, and for obvious reasons, was the conflict of interest that it not only posed to me sitting next to my girlfriend, who I'm going to go home and probably have sex with as soon as this is over, might have to wait until halftime of the Cowboys game. But either way, you get the point. And yet it really turns into about 45 minutes of, you know, fire, brimstone, don't drink, don't smoke, don't have sex out of wedlock. A lot of things that really go against human urges and instincts, if you will. Did you ever get that throughout your experience going to church?
I did. Now, there is a certain positive to be said about teaching self-control. You know, not having sex before marriage might be an admirable goal because of the rampant spread of STDs and teen pregnancies and that kind of thing. I understand wanting to protect your children from that type of thing. However, there are effective ways to protect your children while still allowing them to fulfill their baser instincts, which they're going to do anyway. It's been proven that abstinence training doesn't work. Just doesn't. And so there are things to be said for aspiring to the goal. I understand that. But, I mean, let's ask Ted Hager how well this works out. Are you familiar with him?
No.
Ted is one of my favorite guys. He really is. He leads a very conservative evangelical church in Colorado. And he just hates gays. Just hates them up and down. And then a year or two ago, what happened? He was found cheating on his wife with a male prostitute.
I know who this is. I know. The name was familiar. I was like, I don't know who it is.
This is the guy. And so you have to wonder how many of these guys are out there saying, do as I say, not as I do. And I just think it's time to drop the bullshit and... You know, if you're going to come out and give me a message, that's fine. If you're going to give me a message to my self-interest, that's fine. But don't wrap it up in some mysterious being is going to be mad at me for doing what I naturally do.
Let's check this clip out. I pulled this in preparation for the show because I one of my favorite presidents, admittedly, is John F. Kennedy. And I'll even be even more honest. You know, part of that might have to do with the turning point that the country, you know, went not in the right direction after his assassination, as well as what actually did happen to him. But I felt that JFK, like many other presidents, both Republican and Democrat, offered a great deal to the country. And here's what he had to say long ago regarding the separation of church and state.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no Catholic prelate would tell the president, should he be Catholic, how to act. And no Protestant minister would tell his parishioners for whom to vote. When no church or church school is granted any public funds or political preference. And when no man is denied public office merely because his religion differs from the president who might appoint him or the people who might elect him. I believe in an America that is officially neither Catholic, Protestant, nor Jewish. When no public official either requests or accepts instructions on public policy from the Pope, the National Council of Churches, or any other ecclesiastical source. When no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace or the public acts of its officials. And where religious liberty is so indivisible that an act against one church is treated as an act against all.
And I like how he followed that up. An act against one church is an act against all. And that fits into it's that two-sided thing that we were talking about several minutes ago about the wall being there isn't so much to keep church out of government, but also to keep government out of church. And I think that's a compelling thing.
That's a very valuable thing. I think that one religion shouldn't hold more sway than another religion. Now, that might just be me as an atheist thinking that they're all equally invalid, and I hate to be biased that way, but I don't want any particular dominant faith. I don't want there to be a Protestant branch of the government. You know, I don't want there to be the president and Congress and the Supreme Court and the Baptist Church. I don't want Richard Land involved.
Well, like you said, too, I think what's most bothersome about religion playing a role in government, especially from that direction, religion into government, is there anything more terrifying than having a government that operates on a system of quote-unquote faith that ignores fact, that ignores, in some cases, science, that ignores not just history, but its own bloody history? That's, again, look at the countries who allow that to happen, and you'll see that that's not really the way to go. I mean, it's by a long shot not the way to go. One figure that we've seen in the media over the last couple of years, maybe a tad bit longer, is none other than Sarah Palin, who is... You got a word for her, Warren? Because MILF comes to mind, granted, but there's a better one. Sarah Palin, what do you think?
Mental patient. I'm sorry, that's all I can come up with for her. This particular individual should never, ever have been given any level of authority whatsoever. The mere fact that she could have been elected mayor and even governor is stunning to me, given her earlier career as a sports newscaster. In only the loosest terms, was she ever a journalist? Absolutely shameful electoral result, and probably one of the things that makes me question democracy everywhere once in a while.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I've said before, democracy is not the best form of government. What was so brilliant about this country's inception was the fact that it was a republic. That is not a democracy. There's democratic elements, but a republic is way better than a democracy. So I'm with you. I would definitely question democracy, because in a democracy, you know, 51% of the people win, 49% can be screwed. Too close to half for me, but nonetheless. Sarah Palin questioned not long ago on CBS about Thomas Jefferson stating that a wall must exist between the religious industry. I call it the religious industry because it is. There's a lot of money there. But anyway, a wall must exist between religion and government. Here's what Sarah Palin had to say on CBS.
His intention in expressing that was so that government did not mandate a religion on the people. And Thomas Jefferson also said, never underestimate the wisdom of the people. And the wisdom of the people, I think, in this issue is that people have the right and the ability and the desire to express their own religious views, be it on a very personal level, which is where I choose to express my faith, or in a more public forum. And the wisdom of the people, thankfully ingrained in the foundation of our country, is so extremely important. And Thomas Jefferson wanted to protect that.
Now, even for all of her faults, and Warren, I don't know that she's a mental patient, you know, I mean, that might be a bit extreme. I've known a couple of mental patients and a little more off the rocker than her, but I do agree with you that she's completely unqualified, and I don't know exactly how... I'm not sure how intelligent she really is. I'm not even sure how religious she is. But even Sarah Palin, who might very well believe that dinosaurs walked the earth with mankind some 3 or 4 or 5 thousand years ago, whatever it was, even she has to acknowledge that church and government has to be separate. Furthermore, Vice President Joe Biden, on the same exact question of Thomas Jefferson and the separation of church and state wall that needs to exist.
The best way to look at it is look at every state where that wall is not built. Look at every country in the world where religion is able to impact on the governance. Almost every one of those countries, there's real turmoil. Look, the founders were pretty smart. They had gone through, several hundred years of wars, religious wars. They were in the midst of religious wars in Europe, and they figured it out. The best way to do this is keep the government out of religion. They took religion out of government, but they didn't mean religion couldn't be in the public place, in the public square.
So there's a couple of figures, just for what it's worth. Plus, we have this cool new radio show, and it sounds cool to have those people here, you know. But that's a fact. I mean, here's, you know, vice president and hopefully not a presidential candidate here in a few years, Sarah Palin. Do you notice many other examples of any elected officials that seem to be pro Christian states, or because I don't really know of many. I know there's certainly some right wing folks out there, but I haven't quite heard of anybody that, just off the top of my head, that has managed to get elected, especially in either houses of Congress, and seems to think that we're supposed to drop the flag or hoist the flag with our left hand and raise a Bible in the other?
Oh, I know a bunch of them that would like us to believe that. I mean, if you look at the 2008 Republican debates for their presidential candidates, just the question where they asked, how many of you believe that evolution is not true? And only three of them did not raise their hands. So of the 11 candidates that they had, 8 out of the 11 believed that evolution was untrue. Now, that's a dangerous precedent to set when you're electing the person who's going to be the leader of the free world.
Yes. Yes. And even I'm not going to... I look at the theory of evolution, and as well as I understand it, and forgive me if I'm slightly wrong on this, because school was a number of years ago. But the idea that we came from apes, and I've heard it put like that, I don't put much stock into that, because if that were the case, then apes wouldn't be apes. We would have evolved from apes, and apes would have existed, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. Now, having said that, I do absolutely believe that evolution happens. That's proven almost daily in life everywhere. Life adapts. Life has to adapt. I mean, the Earth by itself mandates that evolution has to take place. This is how food chains are managed. That's not a question in my mind. So what do you think about that? I mean, what's your definition of the theory of evolution?
Well, this could be a whole show in and of itself, but the belief that we evolved from apes is completely untrue. Because what you're looking at isn't an evolution from, say, a chimpanzee into a human. You're looking at what's called a branching evolution. There's a common ancestor between chimpanzees and humans that was probably very similar to both chimps and humans. But because of various geological or environmental differences, you had two populations of that common ancestor that branched off. And then you get simultaneous evolution in two separate directions. So if you were to trace back to whatever this common ancestor is, it would probably look relatively similar to our primate forms. But it wouldn't be a chimpanzee. We don't evolve from modern-day animals. That's one of the big misconceptions about evolution is, well, gee, if we evolve from monkeys, why are there still monkeys? Well, it's because we didn't evolve from monkeys. They evolved from the same common ancestor that we did that was some type of primate.
Well, I mean, you can see this in... I mean, look at the birds in the world. How many different kind of birds are there? Well, they obviously carry near identical DNA, like we do with gorillas, yet there's obviously a pretty profound difference, both where intelligence is concerned, and gorillas are much better athletes than we are. So we took some things and they took other things, whatever. Alligators and crocodiles. Okay? Not exactly the same, but obviously there's a relationship. So I would have to fall into the definite believer in evolution in some extent, because I think it's proven. Whereas I can hear a 60-minute lecture on the crucifixion of Christ, and I'm not going to get any scientific basis for that. I'm not going to get any proof. Maybe it did happen. I'm frankly quite undecided. I'm not even positive. I'm not saying Christ did not live, but I don't know that he did. I don't know what's up. I mean, you know, if you go back to, quickly, because I know you want to get to some things here too. You go back to like kindergarten, first grade, maybe second grade. Did you ever play that game where the teacher sat the class, you know, 15, 20 kids in a semicircle, kind of at the front of the class? And the teacher sits at the middle, and she hands a piece of paper with a note on it to one student. That student reads it, puts it in his pocket, and he whispers it to the next student. And so on, and so on, and so on. 20 students later, it's not the same anymore. So just from a historical standpoint, I mean, it's very clear that mankind doesn't really... How reliable is mankind? And I know we could quickly, you know, veer the show into the validity of religion, but that's not what we're trying to do. But you have to kind of touch on that as justification for separating church and state. Church is a faith. It's an idea. It's a theory. What was it a few years ago that... you might recall, might be close to 10 years ago, it was a number of years ago. Theory of evolution. It's just a theory. All the Christians were trumping out these t-shirts and, you know, just, it's just a theory. It's just a theory. Well, what they believe in is an absolute theory. I mean, Adam popping out of the dirt? Come on.
Well, and more importantly, that term theory is often thrown around by creationists without keeping in mind the definition that's used by people who are evolutionists. When you talk about the theory of evolution, I'm going to read the definition of a theory. It is a coherent group of general propositions used as principles of explanation for a class phenomena. Now, that essentially means this is the best explanation we have for the observable data. That doesn't mean we just made this up. That would be a hypothesis. It doesn't mean that man was sprung up out of the dirt. That would be faith. A theory is what you put together when you observe something and you go, huh, I wonder what caused that. Well, here's my theory. This is my explanation for it. And so evolution, calling it just a theory, is actually giving it legitimacy.
I always thought that the theory was the idea that isn't backed by anything.
No, that's your hypothesis.
Nah, okay, whatever.
Yeah. One of these days, and I'm actually trying to work on this, I would like to get Oxford professor Richard Dawkins on, who has written a fantastic book called The Greatest Show on Earth. And it's a great audiobook. It's 13 hours long. It's amazing. But it's all about how evolution is a fact. And it's just really time for us to get over it and accept that. Now, on that topic, I do want to play a clip here from Frank Schaefer. He was on Rachel Maddow's show a little while ago. And listen to what he has to say about growing up in this culture of right-wing extremism in Christian America.
The mainstream, not just media, but culture, doesn't sufficiently take stock of the fact that within our culture, we have a subculture which is literally a fifth column of insanity that is bred from birth through homeschool, Christian school, evangelical college, whatever, to reject facts as a matter of faith.
And he makes a great point here with the rejection of facts and that it's a culturally ingrained trait to raise your children in religious schools, in some cases homeschooled families without even any kind of external influence, to intentionally reject what is widely accepted fact among the rest of the world.
Do you know who Dresden James is?
I do not.
Okay, I don't either, but I found this quote online that really echoes that clip. When a well-packaged web of lies has been sold gradually to the masses over generations, the truth will seem utterly preposterous and its speaker a raving lunatic. It kind of, I imagine something like that happening when the first astronomers and scientists centuries ago were concluding, or at least deciding, or theorizing, if you will, that the Earth was round instead of flat.
Right. And in general, you don't have these this danger that arises from simply having faith. Again, we're not talking about religion. We're talking about religious extremism. When faith becomes willful ignorance of what is truth, and in some cases dangerous ignorance. Astronomers who were imprisoned or even executed for their beliefs in what turned out to be, oops, the truth. And it does lead to other things. When you start getting into world events, this is one of my favorite quotes from Jerry Falwell, the recently departed Jerry Falwell. This was on September the 13th. This is related to our favorite topic, September the 11th. But this is what he had to say about who was really behind the attacks of September 11th.
What we saw on Tuesday, as terrible as it is, could be minuscule if in fact God continues to lift the curtain and allow the enemies of America to give us probably what we deserve.
Well, Jerry, that's my feeling. I think we've just seen the antechamber to terror. We haven't even begun to see what they can do to the major population.
The ACLU's got to take a lot of blame for this.
Oh, yeah.
And I know I'll hear from them for this, but throwing God off successfully with the help of the federal court system, yes, throwing God out of the public square, out of the schools. The abortionists have got to bear some burden for this, because God will not be mocked. And when we destroy 40 million little innocent babies, we make God mad. I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and say, you helped this happen.
Now, in this case, you get a man who is putting the blame for September 11th on social issues groups, on the ACLU, on the People for the American Way, on lesbians and feminists. I don't know where he gets this list from, but he lists off seven groups of people who couldn't have been less involved in a religious terrorist extremist act, which we all believed it to be at the time. And in doing so, he misdirects the rage of the nation, the very appropriate rage of the nation, toward innocent people. And that's yet another dangerous thing that this kind of extremist faith can bring about.
You know, I just had a revelation on that. The track record of religion is so bad that even for a false flag attack like 9/11, the best culprit or fall guy is religion itself. You know? Because, I mean, at this point, we know it had nothing to do with these Muslim people and whatnot. But like you said, that day we thought it was, and we all bought it hook, line, and sinker, because we knew just casually and even very ignorantly that there's a lot of religious fanatics on the other side of the world, this country as well, but especially in the Middle East. You've obviously got a pretty rich history of religious conflict and strife, and religion is so bad, religious extremism is so bad, that it even made the perfect scapegoat for that situation.
Well, it does. And the very odd thing about that is they don't look in the mirror and see that they are motivating the same kind of extremist violence among their followers that they accuse other cultures of doing. And a great example of that is the group Operation Rescue. It's an anti-abortion group, which might very well have a laudable goal of saving the lives of unborn children. I understand where they're coming from. But Randall Terry, the head of this group is, in any other context, motivating people to violence. And listen to what he had to say, and this is a relatively recent quote after the murder of Dr. George Tiller, who ran an abortion clinic in Kansas. And his murderer was recently convicted of first-degree murder, the premeditated murder of George Tiller, because he was a doctor who provided abortions. And the way that he murdered him was particularly cold-blooded. He approached him in the lobby of George Tiller's church and shot him in the back of the head. Now, that's a relatively cold-blooded thing. It seems pretty anti-Christian to me to kill a guy in church. But this is what Randall Terry had to say in response to the killing.
Dr. George Tiller has been killed. George Tiller was a mass murderer. He had blood all over his hands. We in the pro-life movement must not flinch. We must not fear. We must not waver. We must not surrender a single inch. He was a mass murderer. We have to say that over and over again. He was one of the most evil people on the planet. Every bit as evil as Nazi war criminals. Now, I know that that offends some people that are watching this, but it is the truth. It is the truth from heaven's vantage point. According to the scriptures, the law of God, the teachings of the church, he was a mass murderer. And he reaped what he sowed.
You know, you'll note that again and again and again, he mentions the term mass murder. George Tiller was a mass murderer. He's justifying this murder. He's not condoning it necessarily. He doesn't come right out and say, gee, it's a good thing we got rid of this guy. But he is, in fact, trying to keep people from feeling guilty about the fact that one of his followers committed a terrorist act.
Do you really think he's trying to convince others not to feel guilty, or perhaps himself?
Well, I've seen a lot of material from Randall Terry, and to be frank with you, he has a very sincere belief that unborn children are completely defenseless and must have somebody advocate for them. And I understand where he's coming from. But I don't think he honestly felt guilty about this event. I really don't. I think he was just trying to deflect this firestorm of backlash against the anti-abortion movement. And I think secretly, deep down, if we could read his thoughts on this, and this is, again, speculation on my part, I would have to think he'd be doing some kind of happy dance in his own head when he got the news about this.
Yeah, it's possible. I just know that from a psychological standpoint, you know, you hear people talk, and they'll tell you a lot about how they feel or how they really feel by the things they say. And when people, a lot of times you'll see this on some of the crime shows, some of the forensic shows, First 48 Hours and such, you'll see suspects being interviewed that clearly know more than they're, you know, alluding to, or might even be guilty. They say the same things over and over and over and over. Obviously to try to sell the authorities on this, but I think that to some extent, we don't have to get into the psychology of Randall Terry, you know, by any means, but like you said, it's a pretty cold-blooded thing to, you know, shoot somebody in church or anywhere for that matter. And I just wonder if there is an inner conflict of interest with that kind of behavior, because let's face it, what he is advocating is the same thing that this country, at least several years ago, was so freaked out about Muslim fanatics doing. You know, killing people indiscriminately in the name of religion.
Exactly. And when we get to this point where it's on a personal level, where it's one individual killing another individual, that's bad. That is unconscionable. However, when it gets bigger, and this is why the separation of church and state is so important, when you start getting government-sanctioned religious terrorism or religious war, that's when you really get a danger. And that's where we're starting to cross the lines a little bit. Here we are involved in two wars in heavily Muslim areas, And I want you to listen to this report from Steve Doocy. This was on Fox and Friends about... Well, here, just listen to the clip and see what it's about.
Apparently, for over 30 years, Trigicom has put little coded Bible passages. See that we've kind of highlighted that. It's kind of a serial number, and then it's followed by, you can just barely see, JN812. That means John 812. Well, this has caused a lot of people to say, is that really appropriate for the military to be using stuff that's got Bible passages on it? My wife made a good observation yesterday when we were talking about this story, and that is, hey, wait a minute. The Taliban and the extremists, what is it they say just before they blow themselves up or to kill somebody? They say Allah Akbar. So if anybody's making this a religious thing, they started it.
Here we have an American company who's making military equipment, rifle scopes in this case, with Bible verses printed on the side. And Steve Doocy, who frankly has the intellectual horsepower of a walnut, is sitting there trying to tell us that it's okay because they did it first, because they made it a religious issue first, because they were the ones who initiated the religious violence. You don't answer a wrong with a wrong. Again and again, we've tried to convince the Muslim world that our actions in Iraq and Afghanistan have nothing to do with their religious motivations, and that we're just there to protect ourselves. But what people like Steve Doocy want us to be doing is fighting a religious crusade, to borrow George Bush's term for it, in the Middle East. And I don't know if you recall the first four crusades, but they didn't go so well for the Christians.
No, they didn't. But again, we don't like to look back at history too much, and those who fail to learn from history are destined to repeat it. So,
I suppose as a final thought on this, I do want to share an introduction from an excellent series that Richard Dawkins did back in 2006. And it was called The Root of All Evil, aired on BBC. You can pick up copies of it from his website, actually, or the BBC website. Fantastic series, and this is what he has to say in the introduction to the piece.
There are would-be murderers all around the world who want to kill you and me and themselves because they're motivated by what they think is the highest ideal. Of course, politics are important. Iraq, Palestine, even social deprivation in Bradford. But as we wake up to this huge challenge to our civilized values, don't let's forget the elephant in the room, an elephant called religion. The suicide bomber is convinced that in killing for his God, he will be fast-tracked to a special martyr's heaven. This isn't just a problem of Islam. In this program, I want to examine that dangerous thing that's common to Judaism and Christianity as well. The process of non-thinking called faith.
And again, it's that process of unthought, of willful ignorance in extremist faith that leads to very, very dangerous situations, which is why we don't want these religious extremists involved in governmental decisions. Because if you have an extremist church leader who also has the will of the military to bend to his power, that is going to lead to a very, very dangerous situation. We've seen this time and time again throughout the Middle East. We've seen it time and time again throughout history. And I don't want to see it happen in the United States of America.
You know, Warren, that clip from Dawkins takes me to a quote that I'd actually pulled. And this is an unknown quote. In other words, the author is unknown, at least based on wherever I was looking on the web. So I'm going to steal it unofficially. Morality is doing what is right, no matter what you're told. Religion is doing what you're told, no matter what is right. And I think that kind of echoes that in a way. And I think that's totally the truth. I mean, growing up in Texas, I tell you what, man, it's a very different culture in some ways, especially when you get out of the city, you get, you know, out. And this is true anywhere, you know, in any country. The further away from the populace you go, the further behind some people are, and you know, the excuses or the overlooking certain things, you know, be it the, you know, maybe it's just a deacon outside smoking when clearly he's not supposed to be smoking, but he's outside smoking right after church and no one says anything, and you can take it to any height you want. I think that that's a that's one thing that religion has done a spectacular job of encouraging and allowing, and that quote really says it all. Morality is doing what's right no matter what you're told. Religion is doing what you're told no matter what is right. So there you have it. Very, very compelling stuff. That will do it for our show this week. Look forward to having you next week once again on jackalope105fm.com. For Warren Dyson, I am Dallas Andrews, and this has been Republic Theory. Have a good one.